Right, hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Repti Chat podcast. Quick bit of housekeeping and then we can get our guests in the studio. First up is Patreon. Let me get them on screen now. So, Patreon. Thank you to all the Patreon supporters. Your contributions make running this pod just that little bit easier and it encourages me to keep making extra content for you guys as well. If you want to join the Patreon, why would you join the Patreon, I hear you ask? Well, there's a link in the show notes below. You'll get early access to any pre-recorded podcasts, and you get early access to any vlogs. As well as that, you get access to the Repti Squad Discord, where we're slowly building a nice little community. There's some stickers and merch on the way, and it all starts for as little as £1 a month, and there is even a 7-day free trial with no obligation after that. So if you want to come and check it out, feel free to just nip in and have a look, see what's going on. Let's see who is in the comments quickly, as the chat is popping off today. Let's say hello. So who we got? We got Dan. Hi, Dan. All from America. Hey, Chris. Paul is in the house. Hey, Paul. Matt, thank you very much for tuning in. Anybody else? Serenity Dragons, thank you very much for popping in. Bailey's background, it's nice to see you. Jack Bateman, lovely to have you here. Thank you very much. Fiona and Elijah, hello to you both. Got full family watching today. Ben, you need to read all the Elijah shout-outs. I will do my very best to read every single shout-out, specifically from Elijah. The rest of you, sorry. Right, quick little bit and bob before we get our guest on for today. This is just a super, super quick one and not something I would normally bring up on the pod. But if you don't know, I am a Tough Mudder UK ambassador. When I'm not on a podcast or doing something animal related, you'll probably find me rolling around in the mud doing that. So it's something I really enjoy. What does that mean? Why am I bringing it up? Well, basically, I have been given a discount code, which is on screen now. Audio listeners, the code is TMBA24-BENN. If you want to use that code, if you fancy having a go at Tough Mudder, that will save you some pennies. So I thought I would just chuck that out there quickly, and that is enough of me promoting that. Let me just make sure that there's no Elijah shout-outs. No, we're fine. Cool. So, moving on. Today's guest, someone I've been following for a good while now. You've probably seen him as part of the 12 Pods of Christmas as well. He keeps a menagerie of animals from tree monitors to skinks, royal pythons, and plenty of fish as well. So without any further ado, please welcome Michael to the pod.
Yo.
Hello, hello. Thank you for coming on. How are we?
No worries. Yeah, not too bad. Just to say, Tough Mudder does not sound fun.
That's what I thought before I did it, and honestly, I've done 20 of them now and I absolutely love it. So I thought
I went there. Oh, how old was I? 15 or 16 to watch my dad do one, like years ago, and yeah, it didn't look fun. Some of the bits looked quite interesting, and then
some of it isn't fun, some of it like 11 out of 10. That's why I keep going back.
And do you do all of them, like all the obstacle courses?
What, each different obstacle? I've done every... Yeah. The first time I did it, I made sure I did every single obstacle. There's a few now that I avoid. So I avoid the two electrical obstacles because last year I got electrocuted and I passed out and my face was down in water and I'm scared myself and I won't do it again.
Yeah.
For a while. No, but apart from that, I do everything.
I remember what my dad did it with two of his friends and one of his friends got electrocuted, passed out and cracked their head in a stone in the mud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't look fun.
It does happen. Luckily I was already on my hands and knees, so I didn't really have far to go. But I woke up and I was like, oh my god, I'm still underwater, what's going on?
No, it was the It was the like the final one before the finish line. So
with
his
all the dangly down ones.
Yeah. So his final, their like celebration team photo at the end is him just streaming blood. No.
Yeah, I can imagine. But there's a comment here. I've got to bring them up as soon as they come up on screen. So it says Elijah says, "Hi Michael, you're the best YouTuber."
Thanks, Elijah. And Elijah's just got a cool new animal. So shout out to him.
Is that? Do we know? Do I know what that is? Was it on Patreon earlier?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
I just got sent it.
Elijah
has good taste in animals, and he's got a cool. I did get sent the name as well, but
that's fine.
Big boy, I think something along those lines. No, he's cool. I like him. Good choice, awesome. Elijah.
Awesome. So let's get into it. Thanks again. An extra special bonus thank you for coming on, because obviously you weren't the planned guest for today, but you very kindly jumped in at the last minute and have saved me. And I was going to ask you to come on the podcast at some point, so why not today?
So
a little bit short notice, but I am eternally grateful. So obviously these episodes, I like to start with the get to know questions.
Yep.
Simple this or that questions. So if you are ready, we can get straight into them. So first one, cats or dogs?
Dogs, but I have both, and I feel bad saying that.
That's right. Dogs are better.
I have two cats and one dog, but yeah.
No, that's fine.
I've always had both.
I've not had both together. I've had cats and I've had dogs. As I've got older, I'm now allergic to cats, and I never used to be. So
all right.
Dogs all the way, unfortunately. Snakes or lizards?
Lizards.
Frogs or salamanders?
Frogs.
Centipedes or millipedes?
I always get them mixed up.
Centipedes bite and it hurts. Millipedes are...
Yeah, so I keep millipedes.
Yeah.
A couple. But yeah, no, I always get them and I always have to Google. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. Spiders or scorpions?
I've never kept a scorpion.
Yep.
Kept a spider. A couple of spustling. Spiders, I think.
Yeah. I've kept both, and I think spiders are a little bit more exciting than scorpions. I've never had much luck with scorpions, actually.
I've never kept scorpions. It's something that's kind of been on the back burner.
Yeah. Birds or butterflies?
Birds.
Grassland or woodland?
Woodland.
Nice. Beach or mountains?
Mountains. I don't like the beach.
Got to be mountains, especially
like the beach.
Saying that, Scotland has some of the most beautiful beaches I've ever been.
Oh, I live 5 minutes away from just the most golden beach ever. But
yeah, where, without giving it away too much, where in the country do you live? Because I used to live in Scotland.
Capital of the Highlands, so way up north.
Okay, way up high. Okay, yeah, no worries. There's a beach. My favourite beach is on the north coast of the Firth of Forth. And I cannot remember off the top of my head what it's called, but if you saw a picture of it, you wouldn't think it was Scotland. You think it was like Barbados or something.
I used to live further north, so right up at the top, and there are some stunning beaches. Yeah. There's also a really cool one on the Isle of Skye. It's called the Coral Beach.
Right. Okay.
And rather than sand, it's made up of tiny, tiny little pieces of... it's actually macroalgae that's been fossilized, but it's just... That's it. So it's white.
That's so cool.
It's really cool. So you go along and you think you're on sand, but you're actually on like tiny little shards of coral.
I love that. Absolutely love that. I'm a big Scotland fan. Last two, hot climate or cold climate?
Cold.
And finally, obviously, the most important question of the entire podcast is, what is your favourite biscuit?
Wagon wheel, does that count? Yeah.
I don't know. We'll let the chat decide. Which is a wagon wheel as a biscuit.
If it's biscuit, the foxes circle, the chocolate rings.
Yeah, I know that. So yeah. If we're talking wagon wheels, are you an original man or are you a jam wagon wheel?
Jam.
Yeah, I quite like a jam wagon wheel, to be fair. Chat doesn't look very impressed that you said wagon wheel.
Love a wagon wheel.
Cool. So there we go. That's basically the most important question of the podcast. So we can just carry on. And now we'll start chatting about reptiles, I guess. So, Michael, for those of the people that are listening that don't know who you are, could you give us a history lesson into your reptile keeping sort of career? So, what was your first sort of reptile experience that you can remember? And then how has that sort of blossomed to the keeper that you are today?
Okay, so I'm a bit different, whereas I didn't grow up collecting lizards, seeing frogs in my garden, stuff like that. And I was never that into dinosaurs.
Right, okay.
So you know, you hear a lot of these people that when they get to this kind of segment, they're like, oh yeah, dinosaurs, catching lizards, blah, blah, blah. Was never me. Yeah. I remember having newts, I think they were newts, in a water feature in my garden, like way when I was way young. Other than that, I remember, so from about my 11th birthday to about my 14th birthday, I really, really wanted a hamster.
Right.
Right. And this was it. I really wanted a hamster.
This was a proper first pet as a hamster.
Obviously. Yeah. And every year it was, wait till your next birthday. Wait till your next birthday. Wait till your next birthday. Then on my 13th birthday, they're like, right, you can have one. So I bought a whole bunch of the stuff. And then my parents were like, no, you're not getting one. It was gutted.
Yeah.
So my 14th birthday, the local chain shop, the big chain shop up north, up in this, then they just opened a new shop, put the local shop out of business.
Yeah.
Little small shop out of business. And they had a reptile section and pretty simple, like pretty basic leopard gecko, crested gecko, bearded dragon. And for my 14th or 15th Christmas, like around that time, I was like, I want a lizard. And they're like, okay, right, you can have a lizard. So I went in and I got to pick, and you were like, right, you can buy the starter kit, wait a week, come get your lizard. And it was weird, my parents were like, you can either have a leopard gecko or a crested gecko, and you can have it upstairs in your bedroom, or you can have a bearded dragon and we'll keep it downstairs. Their thought process was that it's more money for the bearded dragon, it can be like decoration, family pet.
Yeah, that makes it fair enough.
And I was like, I want the biggest.
Yeah.
So I got the beardy in a 3-foot Exoterra starter kit.
Right.
Yeah. With the heat rock, the whole shebang. Now we're talking 13 years ago.
Yeah.
13, 14, yeah, around then. So yeah, 3-foot Exoterra, heat rock. Yeah. Coil UVBs.
Calcium sand or reptile carpet or something like that.
But yeah, all that.
Yeah.
I had it in that for less than a year before I was like, I need something bigger. I got a 4-foot Viv. And when I got the 4-foot Viv, because I bought it with my own money, I was like, it's going upstairs in my room.
Yeah.
So I took it upstairs. And that I had him for years, all the way through like the rest of my teenage years until I went into college and all the rest. But unfortunately, he died. Not too old, to be fair, but like at that age you're not sure what's going on, but
yeah
quite a nasty way to go in the end. And at that point I was keeping quite a few fish tanks as well.
Okay.
I then moved south, so a couple of hours south to where I am now, was living with my parents. I still kept fish, for a few years, moved out into my own place. So by this point I had my 4-foot Viv and my 3-foot Exoterra just sitting spare. And I bought myself another bearded dragon. So now we're talking six years ago.
Yeah.
I got my second bearded dragon, which was like my first reptile in this kind of era. I've still got him. That's Toothless, my beardy. And then I bought a leopard gecko. Now, my flat, when I lived with my flatmate, we had a lot of fish tanks. Yeah. Like, a lot. 15, 16, like they were everywhere in every bedroom. Living room was just wall-to-wall fish tanks. The beardy was underneath. The beardy Viv was sat underneath the TV. The TV, that was the TV stand. It was just... Yeah. And my landlord was really cool. Like, she was like, yeah, no worries. Fish tanks are awesome. I remember asking for another lizard. And she gave a really vague, no, well, as long as it's not a snake, don't get a snake.
Right, okay.
No, honestly, I loved my landlord. She was great. And like I say, she let us have a lot of fish tanks.
Yeah.
So we kind of left it at that. And I was like, did she give me permission for another lizard? Because she kind of said no, then said, just don't get a snake. And so I ended up getting a leopard gecko. Kept that in my bedroom for a while. And I just had the two of them for quite a bit. Moved into this house that I'm in now. Coming on 5 years ago, got so like when we were looking at houses, I was like, right, I want a fish room, I want somewhere to have all my fish tanks and my vivariums, and I want a garden big enough for a koi pond. That was my two. So we found this house, it was perfect. It's got a converted garage. Moved all my fish tanks into it. Again, you're talking a lot of fish tanks, wall to wall, and slowly they've started to dwindle and more vivariums have kind of popped up. So right. That was about 4 years ago. And then, so I had my beardy, my leopard gecko, I got my pair of pink tongue skinks, got a royal. I went through that kind of phase where you're just like buying up everything you can.
Yeah, I think that's the stage that we all go through.
Yeah, and it was kind of this, wow, I've got my own place, I've got my own space, I don't need to ask permission.
Yeah.
Sort of. I went to the pet shop just to buy some food. I seen a crested gecko that looked cool. I was like, yeah, I'll have that, just why not? So it slowly kind of spiraled into all this stuff. Bought quite an extensive collection. Slowly the fish tanks got moved out, more vivariums came. And then over the last about year and a half, it's been primarily monitor lizards. So
yeah,
now keep quite a few monitor species.
Yeah, you have quite a nice collection that we will go into.
Yeah, so it's very.
In fact, let's go through that now because I can swap the two questions around that I've got that regard to it. So, what obviously you've mentioned monitor lizards, and there's going to be a lot of fish people. Well, hopefully, there'll be some fish people listening as well. So. What are you currently keeping? I know there's a huge list, probably. So do the best you can. Don't worry if you miss some off.
Right.
Go for your top picks if you want. But
so fish wise, I've got the tank behind me. It's a 420 liter, 5 foot, and it's mostly South American. So it's got a lot of valves in there. To be fair, a lot of Amazon swords, and it's South American based. The showpiece fish, I don't know where they are just now, are my pair of zebra cara. So quite a rare dwarf cichlid. It swaps between reptile room and fish room. It's always been the fish room. I always call it the fish room. It's not got that many fish in it anymore. In my room, I've got a 300 litre mixed reef marine tank. And then a 180 litre grow out, which I'm growing some young angelfish in. I hope to pair off.
Oh, cool.
So that's all the fish I'm keeping at the moment. Not a whole lot. Three tanks.
Yeah, I'm not. I'd love to have a marine tank. Before I had reptiles, I had tropical fish, but my wife has a strict "there's no water" policy in my house. So reptiles are fine. We're not allowed fish of any type.
my marine tanks probably. I spend more time maintaining my marine tank than my entire reptile collection. Yeah. I spend more money maintaining my marine tank than my entire reptile collection, and it's I've invested more money probably than. Maybe not my whole reptile collection now, but a lot of money, like that equipment. Yeah. And I bought it all brand new. Like, it wasn't cheap.
I know marine stuff is particularly pricey.
And then the other issue as well is that because it's open top, because you've got all the big lighting and stuff, it creates a lot of humidity. I have to run a dehumidifier in that room just for the marine tank. It's a passion of love. It takes a lot of effort. But it's also the one tank. If I was to go down to one tank, it would be the only tank I'd keep. Yeah. I think that's me maybe being stubborn with the amount of money that I've put into it, but yeah. Okay.
That's fair enough.
So reptiles, I've got my bearded dragon that I mentioned before, a pair of frilled dragons. They're a dream species. I've wanted them for years. So they're my only agamids at the moment. I've got my pair of pink tongue skinks. I've had them a good amount of years now. I've bred them for 3 seasons running. This will be my 4th season with them, so they're quite a staple in my room now, and I always have babies, which is quite exciting. Geckos, I've got 2 Lichianus geckos, 2 crested geckos, and a leopard gecko. Monitors, pair of Kimberley Rock monitors, pair of Aki monitors, trio of Timorensis monitors, Timor monitors, and then my green tree monitor wogs.
Nice.
Snakes, 2 royal.
I can see your brain walking around the room as you go.
I'm going up the vivs. I'm trying not to, but then I'm trying to group them as well, and they're not all in groups. Snakes, I've got 2 royal pythons and a baby bridle eye.
Nice.
The carpet python.
Awesome. So I'm a big fan of those as well. So yeah, quite the selection.
And then I've recently, in the last 6 months, got in quite deep into isopod keeping as well. I've got quite a few.
Yeah, because I know you are. You got one or two species, to say the least.
Just a couple.
Yeah. So something you mentioned there, which you mentioned about the frillies, was your one of your dream reptiles. And you mentioned to me briefly, I think it was yesterday when we were chatting, about your dream reptile list.
Yeah.
So could you tell us a bit more about this list?
When I was 15, 16 years old, and I just had my bearded dragon, I loved him. Like, he was, you need to get that kid in school that their whole personality is their pet. That was me. Like, I loved that beardy. I researched multiple different species. I loved that medium size, semi-arboreal, agamid style lizard. And yeah. I basically came up with this plan for my bedroom that was going to be 4 arboreal vivs and then my beardy, like, off to the side. Those, like, these 4 arboreal vivs. And I was like, right, what am I going to keep in them? And I went down to Australian water dragon, frill dragons, Kimberley rock monitors, and then the green basilisk, the plumed basilisk. Those were like the 4 I want these one day. I'm going to have them in like 4x2x4s, like all dotted around, like just in a big stack with my beardy. And then I had like my dream, like, oh, if I become a millionaire type, which was my green tree monitor.
Yeah.
So those were like the 5 lizards that I was like, I want those. Like, those.
So when did you win the lottery?
Well, I got good friends. Yeah. And then I remember, I vividly remember this green folder I had. I printed out all the care guides. I had like 4 or 5 care guides for each one of those 5 species, and I kept them in, and I would read through them. Since then, I've ticked off all but the green basilisk, the plumed basilisks. Yeah. So I got an Australian water dragon quite early on. And this kind of like generation of my keeping.
Yeah.
He was awesome. I loved him. He was Crixus. His name was Crixus. He had this just a big male. Something went wrong at some point. I'm not 100% sure, but I found him dead one day. It was not good. But then at the same point, it made me learn a lot about the species and that kind of group of animals where I want to see my animals, or at least be able to kind of see them.
Yeah.
And with water dragons and like sailfin dragons, that kind of species in particular, they are notoriously bad for glass surfing and just bashing on the tank. And yeah, Crixus would do it nonstop. Like, you'd be sat in the living room and they would just go boom, boom, boom.
It's almost heartbreaking as well, isn't it? Like, you,
it is. And then his nose got all so I ended up buying like this big, like 4x2x, like this, the one that the that my tree monitor's in now, like this big viv for him, that he had a pond, all this stuff, and it just wouldn't stop. And in the end, I had it all covered, and I literally had to, like, only time I could see him was to open the glass, like, I had it all blacked out.
Yeah.
And yeah, just one. And then I think because of that, when you're in just doing general maintenance, you're not seeing the little things that might be wrong.
Yeah.
And then yeah, just something went wrong at some point and found him dead. So I love that lizard. It's a species that I adore. I see them in the shops when I'm down your way. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, I'd love them again, but I would need to do them in either something huge or like a grow tent kind of style.
Yeah. I don't know much about Australians, but I've seen quite a few like Chinese horse dragons. I don't know how well they compare.
They're similar. Yeah.
They always look like they need a huge enclosure. Like, especially when you see them run from one side of the enclosure to the other, and it's like a split second. And I've seen them, one of the shops that was local to me, it's just closed, they had a pair, and they were in a, I think it was 8 foot long, 4 foot tall, maybe 2.5 foot deep.
Yeah.
And even that, I looked at the pair and I was like, man, they could do with like 3 or 4 times the depth.
Yeah. Like, Crixus was great. I had him clicker trained because he had quite a good food drive. So whenever I went in, I'd use the clicker to tell him that I'm feeding and stuff. He was so clever. Cool. But that was my Australian water dragon. And because of that experience, it put me off the plume basilisk.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want that. Like, I don't have to deal with that again. I've got my pair of frill dragons that are brilliant. I've got my pair of Kimberley rock monitors, which are brilliant. Yeah, and then I've got my green tree monitor. So I've pretty much ticked off that list. But I've also got I made it. So when I was going through that buying everything, I was just like, buy this because it's cool, buy this because it's cool. Oh, like the shop's got this, that's different, I'll buy that. I think a lot of people go through it, but I had to slow down, I had to stop myself. It's like, you're going to run out of room, you're not going to have what you actually want. And I sat down and I made a list of everything that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
So, and things that I like piqued my interest. So it had Lichianus geckos, it had Euromastix, a certain species of Euromastix, collared lizard. I had all these things. I'm trying to find the photo because I made like a collage. So I had all these things, and that was like my realistic list.
Yeah,
it's like things that I want to have in the next kind of like 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I made like a kind of dream list of species that are obtainable, but maybe not. So I made this kind of list.
Yeah.
So collared lizard, Australian water dragon, got that. Lily white crested gecko, not that fast anymore. Frill dragons, sylphin dragons. But then a lot of them are like Aki monitor, Kimberley rock monitor, Lichianus, all things that I now keep. Yeah. Because I kind of stuck quite closely. I then also made like a kind of dream species list and stuff like I love the electric blue day geckos. I think they're great.
I absolutely love those.
Monkey tail skinks, Fijian banded iguanas, like things that I thought were really cool. And then green tree monitor. So
yeah.
Other than my Timor monitors, since I made those lists, I've not bought anything. I've traded for stuff, and actually no, Timor's were a trade too technically. I've not bought anything that's not been on that list.
Okay.
And I've kind of stuck quite closely to that as well. So
yeah, I think it's a good thing to have. Like obviously when I sold all my snakes, I worked out exactly what I wanted, and I'm not 100% sure, but like the Akis and the Gilanai were a sure thing. And it's I've got three empty vivs sat there with heating and lighting and UVB ready to go for a species, and I've like go in the shop regularly. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But because although I haven't decided on the specific species, like I know, for example, I want a tree frog of some type, but I don't know what I want yet. So I'm just not going to, I'm not buying it. And this time around, it's quite refreshing not rushing in and getting stuff.
And it's quite, because then you kind of go through this, oh, I like that. And then for me, it's like, right, well, I'll add it to a list.
Yeah.
And if I still like it in 6 months, a year's time, then I know it's a species I actually want.
Yeah.
But there has been times when I've seen a species, I'm like, oh yeah, they're cool, and they come available, and you're like, yeah. When I lost my Australian water dragon, my big viv sat empty for ages.
Yeah.
And I tried my frillies in it, and it just they don't do a lot. They've like my pair in particular, they didn't utilize the space.
Right.
They also like the female didn't eat as much.
Okay.
And so I moved them back to their still relatively large viv, and they did a lot better. So I was like, right, okay. And I sat there for ages. And before I started getting like friends in the community, my go-to was, you know what, I'm just going to get a Russian rat snake. They're cool. You know, they're an interesting species, and I'll stick that in it, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until I'm like, right, no, actually, what do you want? Like, I always came down to tree monitors. Like, tree monitors have been something that's, you know, everybody always sees the photos. I remember the magazines. I ended up went out and bought an old issue of a magazine I remember from when I was younger that had like the green tree monitor at the on the cover.
Yeah.
Just because I want to reread that article and I remember the photos vividly. It's like, yeah, I want one of those.
Yeah, they are ridiculously cool. Like, and seeing them in pictures is one thing, and then you see them in real life, and it's just like, oh my god, I need one.
But, it's like you don't know what you don't have until you see someone else. I had it with my car as well. I remember driving someone else's car and going, "No, I need a bigger car."
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, you can.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. To be fair, I had a really beat up old 4x4, and I loved it. And then I drove like a relatively modern car. I was like, oh my god, what am I doing with my life? I need this comfort.
I had a Corsa for 2 years, and then my dad bought a brand new Subaru. He went through his midlife crisis, and I drove that once. Yeah. And I was like, no, I need a bigger car.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying my, So I remember.
And then we meet Paul, and he's like, oh man, he's got so many cool lizards.
Well, no, I knew I wanted a tree monitor. I've always wanted a green tree monitor, but then I got to play with Kermit, and I remember going, yeah, like, I need this. That this is what I need. This is like exactly what's missing from my room, because I've got species that are sociable.
Yeah.
I've got species that I can hold, but not a lot. Like my beardies, not a nice, I'm cautious that Elijah's still watching. My beard is not a nice lizard. Yeah. My leopard gecko is the demon reincarnated. Like, he's awful.
I've got a leopard gecko like that as well. I actually, yesterday, I had to clean the water dish because he had done a poo in it. And I opened the glass, picked up the water bottle, and he ran out of his hide and bit my finger. I was like, and it wasn't a food response. He knew full well. Leopard gecko is surprisingly mean sometimes.
My leopard gecko has always been like that. Like, I open the vent and he comes out snapping.
Yeah. If I give it a mist, he'll come out snapping at the water.
My Aki monitors are so food driven, no matter what. As soon as you go near the glass, they're banging on it. Like, they're ready to come out and they're just flinging themselves. I was like, I want something I can interact with. I want something that's interesting and cool. So I decided I wanted a tree monitor. I ended up trading for a trio of Timor monitors. I was like, it's fine. I'm going to get a baby tree monitor, and in a year or two, by that point, I'll get the vet for the Timor monitors. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then the opportunity came up to get my tree monitor, and I was like, oh no, it's a lot quicker than I thought. So I had to move the Timor monitors into something smaller for the time being, and got the tree monitor. But that's never a day goes by I don't regret that decision.
Yeah, that's understandable. I like you say, funnily enough, it was Kermit that sort of got me onto the tree monitors as well. I'm not in a position where I've got the space to have one, unfortunately, but I know what you mean as well. Like, from the I've got my Gillen and my Akis aren't handleable yet, but they're only young. But like, we've got leopard geckos, we've got chameleon, crested geckos, and the chameleon's horrible, he bites. But we've got three leopard geckos, and they don't really do a lot. You can handle them, but they tend to just sit in your hand or, like, sit on your lap. They don't do a lot. Whereas the tree monitors, because they're almost that, or they are that next level of intelligence, you can almost train them like you can train a dog. So there's a lot more interaction there. It's definitely something that I would like at some point. But it's
they're cool.
They are really cool. So this is a question that popped up on my Patreon, actually, and I wanted to bring it up with you. Is there a particular reason that you choose to keep a varied variety of animals instead of focusing on a particular species?
No, and I battle with that every day.
Yeah.
Because part of me just goes, just sell everything and just buy tree monitors.
Yeah.
And then another part of me sees, it's hard because I love interacting with Wogs, my tree monitor, and I really, I'm like, I could just have just lined like vivs just all around my room of just this, and I would never be bored.
Yeah.
But then I go in at night when everything's off and everything's quiet, and I see my royals moving around, or I see my crested geckos out, or like I've got a big male Lichianus gecko who, again's not a nice lizard, but like he's out and about. I'm like, oh, that's really cool, and then I'm like, I do like a variety, and I've always, like I said, because I bought so much stuff, it is quite a varied collection. I've got quite a lot of different things. I've got things that are out at different times, but then I go down to it. I'm like, but what do you interact with? Well, almost always my monitors. Like, my frillies are cool. I love my frillies. They're really good at tong feeding, but they just sit there.
Okay.
Like, I had it before. I did an Instagram Live. Where I had like my frilly out and stuff, and I remember putting them back, and then after the Instagram Live I came through to my living room, and then I sat and chatted for a while, and I was like, wait a second, I didn't close that viv. And I went back through, and the frilly was just still sat on the log that I placed him on. Didn't care. So it's a hard one, because you kind of battle with what you want. Or you always think the grass is greener. I think if I sold up and just bought every color of tree monitor, I would get bored. And it's weird to say, because you're like, wow, they're such kind of fantastic creatures. But I think I would. But at the same point, at the moment, with having such a varied collection, I'm like, well, you don't really, like, I feed, I water, you know, I kind of play around with some stuff. You don't really do a lot. So you're like, well, maybe it is best just to get stuff that you really want to interact with. And then I pull like my royal, like, I've got a big female royal. I'll have her around my neck, and I'm just like, this is cool.
Yeah.
And I've got a young daughter, so like she's just starting to get interested in them, and having a royal that you know is placid, that you can just put on her hands so that she can kind of play with.
There you go.
We had, well, I've got two. I've got a male and a female. So I've had, like, the male's obviously a little bit smaller. We had him out in the conservatory the other day, and he was wrapped around a chair, just chilling, enjoying the sun.
Yeah.
And she was having a tea party, handing him pieces of cake. Like, and it's just like, well, you know, you can't do that with, maybe you could do it with tree monitor, but at the same
Yeah.
point, and then I've got, like, one of my crested geckos is quite chilled,
Yeah.
so, you know, he can just kind of sit.
Yeah, my crested are not chill. I've got three and they just launch themselves where, like, doesn't matter what you're doing. There's no real, like, signal that they're gonna go. 1 minute they're like fine, next minute they're like launching off the sofa, or so we don't tend to handle them much anymore.
Mine
But I
was
found,
like that.
yeah.
Mine was like that for a long time, and I was like, "Do you know what? No, you're a crested gecko. Like,
Yeah.
I've already got a beardie that I can barely touch, and I've already got a leopard gecko that wants to eat my fingers. Like, no, you are going to come out. You're going to sit on my hand, and I'm going to be able to jump you in front of children and show you how cool, show them
Yeah.
how cool you are." So he didn't have a choice in the
No,
end.
that's fair enough. So one out of the three, we do have one that's a bit more social, and she hasn't got a tail as well, so I'm not as, like, worried about her launching off stuff. Like, obviously I don't want her to damage herself,
Yeah.
but if she launched onto the sofa from my hands and I'm sat on the sofa, it's not the end of the world. Whereas the one that still has its tail, I'm so paranoid that I'm gonna, like, cough and it's just gonna drop it because I know what crests are like.
We've got quite a lot of like, my partner's got quite a lot of friends that have got children and stuff. They come over and I pull the crested gecko out all the time, and it's never dropped a tail. Like,
Yeah.
and it's been not rough handled, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's
I
been,
know, right. It's been handled by kids.
yeah.
That's fair enough. Excuse me. Yeah, that's fair enough.
So to answer the question, I
Yeah.
don't know, because I was like, it's hard.
It is hard. It is definitely
Yeah.
hard. Yeah. My ones, I've got quite a nice little collection at the moment, and I've got stuff that's out at different times of the day as well. So, like, as the monitors are going to sleep, the morning geckos next to them are just waking up, are, like, coming out, so they're chirping away. So it's quite nice that I can sort of, like you say, you can go into the room and see, like, oh, they're asleep, but now there's something over here that not necessarily I can interact with, but I can watch them or listen to them or whatever they're doing. So
Yeah.
yeah,
And
it's a
then
good
it's kind
question
of,
from Patreon
yeah.
there. So moving away from reptiles for a minute,
Yep.
and moving on to insects, specifically isopods. I presume isopods are insects. I think I'm correct in saying that. Now, I don't really know anything about isopods. I know that they make a great addition to your cleanup crew, and I've got some orange ones and some dairy cows here, and I occasionally give them some isopod food and give them a spray every now and then. But I think you are probably up a couple of steps on the isopod keeping ladder. You've got quite the selection, and I'm sure that hopefully there's some isopod nerds listening, and because I know there's a lot of them in the world. So could you give us sort of like a highlight reel of what species of isopod you're keeping? And what is it about isopods that that draws you in?
Highlight, so I almost exclusively focus on Cubaris species. So that's your panda kings, rubber duckies, those type of ones. So basically, I was the same. I just had them in cleanup crew. They were quite cool. Sometimes I'd buy, like, you know, granulated or, you know, something a little bit different, and albino and whatever. You're like, oh, they're smart. You throw them in the bin if you never see them.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing panda kings, which are a Cubaris species. And they're the cheapest. They breed the most. And I was like, oh, I've always seen those rubber duckies online. You always see the videos and the photos, and you're like, oh,
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
all really cool. But you're like, 100 quid for 5 bugs? Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, it's mad.
That seems cheap now. But yeah, like, no, I'm not having that. So I seen the panda kings, and they're like, you get however many for 10 quid. And you're like, right, I'm gonna get those. I was setting up a lychee viv at the time, and I remember getting them. And I was like, oh, they're actually quite cool. But I was like, you know what? Right, I'll throw them in. And then slowly I was like, right, they're cool. And then I was like, right, I'm gonna get a tub, and I'm gonna get some, oh, I can't even remember what species it was. I ended up buying, like, a few other, like, the cheaper ones, so like Cubaris penguin, Shirohitsu. Matt sent me some. They used to be Cubaris, they're a different family now. So yeah, I kind of slowly went up, and I started getting some fancier ones. I ended up joining a few WhatsApp groups that run different raffles and stuff.
They are dangerous.
I won Cubaris orange freezies or frenzies. They're just a bright orange Cubaris species, and they're great. So, and slowly, and then Matt and Paul got into it, and we're like, oh yeah, let's all buy loads of isopods. Matt spent ridiculous amounts of money. Me and Paul spent ridiculous amount of money on like raffles and stuff. And I got actually quite lucky in quite a few. So I ended up building up a collection relatively quickly. But I was like, only Cubaris. I'm only keeping Cubaris because if I start looking at other species, I'm going to start like mind like going everywhere. I'm just going to, no, I'll just stick to Cubaris. I keep them all in 9 liter rubs, just boom, 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 almost like a snake rack, just all the same care, no worries. And you always see
I was scrolling through your Instagram earlier. I was like, is that a snake rack? And I looked again. I was like, oh no, that's all isopods.
All isopods. So I kind of did that for a while. I got some highlights, rubber ducky, white ducky, amber ducky, orange freezies, like I said. White sharks, they're a relatively cheap one, but they're really, really, really small. They're really cool. I've got loads and loads of them. But you need loads because they're so small. You need loads to be able to keep them looking like full. What else have I got? Caramel creams. Red tiger, yeah, quite a few. I'm trying to think of what else. I've got one I can't even remember. I'm trying to remember it because I'm like, I've got one that I've not mentioned that's quite cool, but
yeah.
So I did that and I was like, right, Cubaris only. I've got however many space on top of my vivs for however many tabs. And I was like, right, that'll be it. And then I joined, there was like a mystery raffle going on.
Okay.
I put a couple of quid on that. I was like, yeah, whatever. And then it was like £600 worth of isopods. And he released what was in it 2 days before the draw. And it was four species of, I always butcher this, Murella. Basically.
Say it with confidence, it sounds right.
Yeah. So it's like Diablo, Tricolors, those kind of like, they're a decent size. They're beautiful if you keep them in like display tanks, so they're always active, they're always out, they're good size, they're really nice colors, but they climb glass and they get out.
Okay.
So I'm like, no, I don't want that. And so when I seen that was what was on this £600 raffle, I was like, all right, well, you know what I mean, I'm not gonna win it anyway, so what's, you know. And then I won it. And I'm sat here and I'm like, what time is it, can I swear yet?
I was like, Elijah's in bed, it's fine.
I was like, well, what on earth am I going to do? So I ended up going, right. So I researched all of it. I ended up having to buy four new enclosures. So I was like, I can't keep them in my 9 liter. So I was like any other raffle, you're like, right, you get a couple of really, really expensive ones and just loads of like cheap crap to fill it out.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to like throw all the cheap stuff in all my vivs and I'll set up a couple of vivs. No. So I had to buy four new tubs and I got Murella, Ember Bee. They're my favorite and they're actually the cheapest. They're a great species. I love them. They're always out and about. I actually sent some to Bailey from Bailey's Backgrounds because I was like, you need these. Like he was getting into them. I was like, you need some of these. They're great to work with. So I got Ember Bees. I got Tricolors. I got Scarlets. And then I got a line bred, four generations line bred high yellow Scarlet, which is called Pink Lemonade.
Right. Okay.
40 quid a bug.
For wow.
40 quid each.
That's mad.
And I got like a 5 count.
Yeah.
Like 200. Oh, and I was just sat there, I was like, this makes me feel sick.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And I was just like, what am I meant to do with this? So then, because I knew these things were coming, and I was like, oh, you know, any chance you could swap it for some Cubaris? He's like, no, that's what. So I was like,
yeah.
Okay. And then I had people mess because I was known in the groups as the Cubaris guy, and I always bashed these isopods. I was like, nah, I'm not doing it. I'm not entering the raffles. So they're all laughing. And then I had people message me like, oh, well, you know, if you don't want them, you know, I'll offer you trades and stuff. But I was getting offered all sorts, like boa constrictors and geckos, just all this random stuff. I was like, right, no, I'm going to have to. So I ended up buying like big, tall tubs because I was like, right, they're going to climb. So I need something tall. They need high ventilation. So I had to buy vents. They can climb out like the rim. So I needed to buy like foam to go around the rims to stop them climbing out. Whole shebang, too much money that I didn't want to spend.
Yeah.
So now I've got four Murella species as well.
Nice.
Oh, I also got, that was it. I've got red pandas and I've also got recently an import from Spain of pink pandas. there.
I saw those on the Discord, I think.
Yeah, so me and a friend kind of tracked them down. We got them a good price. Yeah, so quite a few isopods.
A few isopods, yeah. And then what is your plans with the isopods? Are you just keeping them and they breed? And
yeah, so it's kind of, obviously when you're buying things that you're only getting 5 or 10 of at a time, it can be difficult. You know, if you lose a couple, that's it. Your whole culture's,
yeah,
your whole setup's gone. So at the moment, my rubber duckies are doing really, really well. My red pandas are doing really, really well. Oh yeah, Paul sent me. Oh, what are they called? Mind blank. Paul sent me a species that they're really interesting. They're doing really well. So my plan is to eventually kind of trade off the ones that are doing really good, and then kind of top up the ones that aren't. So in my caramel creams, they didn't settle too well. I bought a 10 count of those with some birthday money a good few months ago, and they just didn't do too well. And there's a couple of other ones. So I kind of hope to kind of balance out my tubs once it's all going well. Maybe sell a few, like fund it a bit. I've had a few offers for trades. I'm actually getting a small group of mourning geckos to kind of start a colony of those. And it's literally costing me nothing because it's just isopods that
I absolutely love mourning geckos. I'm sure you'll enjoy those. How many are you getting?
6.
Nice. That'll be good.
And I got a message and he's local and he was just like, oh yeah, you know, I'm wanting some cleanup crew. What have you got? So I've had a couple
and
the guy messaged me and he's like, oh, you keep isopods, don't you? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I need something for my white's tree frogs. He loves eating bugs, so I need something cheap and breeds a lot.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't have that.
Like, yeah, I need something like that for my cresties. I've stopped putting isopods in there at the moment because my two tubs, I don't know if they're powdered orange or giant orange or something, and I've got dairy cows, and they breed pretty well, and they sort of recuperate their like numbers really quickly, but the cresties eat them faster than I can breed them.
Pak Chong, that was it. Paul sent me some Pak Chong. They're cool as well. But so yeah, there's this guy messaged me, and he's like, oh yeah, I need cleanup crew. So I was like, right, well, all my cleanup crews in my vivs, so I ended up pulling some stuff out. And then another guy messaged me, and he's like, oh, you know what, I'm after some isopods, just general basic stuff. I was like, okay. I was like, why don't you have something a bit more fancier? So he really likes the white sharks, and I've got loads of those. So I was like, right, well, I'll top you up 10 white sharks. I'll get you some cleanup crew from some of my vivs, and he's going to give me, like, 6 sub-adult mourning geckos. So.
Okay, nice. That'd be really good. I've got 4 mourning geckos at the moment, and I'm on the lookout to add another 2 to my viv at the moment. I absolutely love the mourning geckos. They're really funny. They're quite shy species, but
until you get them in like the hundreds,
yeah, then they don't care. The more I found as well, the more cluttered the viv is, the more you see them, which is really weird because obviously you think they'd be able to hide more. But my plants are growing in really nicely now, and I'll find them right at the front of the viv, but like hiding underneath the leaves, so they feel nice and secure, but they're right in front of my face.
When me and Dan went to Ridgeway last weekend, it's like a 3x3 just as you walk in, and the more you looked, you realized that leaf wasn't brown, it just was covered in mourning geckos.
Yeah, the first time I went to Ridgeway, I was like, oh my god. And then you see like all the eggs around the side of the viv as well.
And it's like clusters of like 10 at a time.
It's mad.
But yeah, like, so they're starting. They've just started to pay off. But like I'm saying, I've only been in it like 6 months. So I'm really just giving it all time to grow. I'm going to trade to try and get some better numbers and tubs that aren't doing so well, and then kind of see from there.
Yeah, cool.
At the moment, it's just trying to keep them alive.
Sorry, say that again.
It's just trying to keep them alive at the moment. I've been notoriously bad with inverts.
Yeah, I forget about my isopods regularly. Luckily, the two species I've got are really hardy.
I was like that because I've tried them a few times. So I've always tried them in like 3-liter like little tubs.
Yeah,
and they've always dried out, and I've never done very well. So when I got more expensive ones, it's like, right, I'm going to put them 9-liter just straight off the bat, and it's like 9-liters is really overkill for 5. But I'm like, at least then I don't need to worry about humidity, I don't need to worry about all this stuff because there's more space, so it's a bit more stable.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think mine are in 5-liter rubs at the moment, but Like they start, there's so much sphagnum moss at one end of it that there's always a bit of damp. So if I if I forget for like a couple of weeks, it's fine. They'll be all right. Yeah, I think the only other species of isopod that I know, I don't know a lot about them, but I keep seeing pop up is magic potions, and I really like those.
They're like the next one. Yeah, so you kind of go from your powder orange, your powder blues, your dairy cows to then like granulated are really nice. Magic potions, or I didn't go magic potions. I went for the albinos, but same species, but the albinos instead. One that's really cool is the clowns. They're always out. My daughter's got a little tub that she walks around with. She opens it up and she lifts up the wood, and there's always like loads of little clown isopods. They're fun. Cool.
Yeah, to be fair, I really like them. Like, I don't know a lot about them, like I said, but like even when I like, so obviously I've got them as cleanup crews and all my vivs, and if I like lift the water bowl up to change the water and I see like baby ones, I'm like, oh my god, yes, I have bred some.
I'm currently trying to get some footage of my rubber duckies. So I've got the tub down, I'm trying to like check in every half an hour to try and get some video footage. Yeah. And the more I open it, the more I'm just like, there is so many babies in here. And like, it's strange to think that a year ago I'd be like, oh god, like I'm not paying that much for those. And now there's just, so yeah, it's quite exciting.
Yeah, I love that. That is exciting. Right, let's move away from the isopods. Now, I know the episode's a bit all over the place, and I'm sort of jumping from thing to thing, but there's loads of bits and bobs that I wanted to ask you, and I couldn't really make them sort of all blend into one, so we'll just have to deal with the popping all over the place. But the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, you've mentioned it right at the beginning of the show, it's an animal that my wife can't stand. I don't know why, but she won't even look at them. And it's not specifically this animal, but it's the species as a whole. And the only experience I have with the species is there was one at my local pet shop. I picked it up. It helicoptered its tail and covered me in poo. And that's the only experience I have. And that is pink-tongued skinks.
Interesting.
Now, yeah. Now, I know the pink-tongued skink was your animal of choice for the 12 pods of Christmas.
Yeah.
And I know you've had some success breeding them as well.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about the pink-tongued skinks. Why did you choose pinks over blues?
There's a story about that. Yeah, so...
So tell us all about that.
So obviously they were my third species that I got in this kind of era of keeping. So I don't have a local pet shop. My local pet shops are 3 hours away. So I drove down and I was like, right, I just upgraded my bearded dragon to a new viv and I just upgraded my leopard gecko. So I had my old 4 foot and my old 3 foot Exoterra. And I knew that the shop I had that I was going to had Euromastics, Aki monitors, blue tongue skinks, pink tongue skinks, and a few other bits. So I knew that there was stuff there that I wanted, but I didn't know what I was going to buy. Yeah. So I had them both kind of set up with heating, like general kind of like, so I could tinker with it if needed. And I went there, their Euromastics weren't the species that I wanted. They had a pair of Akis, but it was their shop breeding pair. They didn't have babies. So it kind of fell on the skinks. There was two pink tongue skinks left, and there was one, I think, imported blue tongue, and he was evil. So I was sat there with an evil bearded dragon at home and a leopard gecko that would eat my fingers, and I was like, I'm not buying another animal that wants to kill me. Yeah. So at this point, it was only the pink tongues, and they were tiny, tiny little things. I did a bit of research, and I was like, you're talking 4 years ago. So there wasn't that many people keeping them. I was like, you see them, like they kind of pop up now and then now, but like there wasn't anybody keeping them.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a whole lot of information. So I bought this really young pair. Shop sold me a big tub of giant African Lansdale eggs that they kind of collected from customers. And off I went. I ended up spending an absolute fortune because all they would eat would be live snails.
Right.
And I couldn't find anywhere to buy live snails, so I had to buy like shop tubs. There's like 6 snails for like £4 or something.
Yeah.
So I went through the whole year. They didn't brewmate that winter, so I had to feed them all through winter. But obviously then snails, you can't buy snails, so I had to be a bit more creative with what I was feeding them. They were just, I loved them, they were great, but I was just like, these things are so difficult. That spring, the following spring, I came home to find 3 babies.
Right. They like they're live bears as well, aren't they?
They're live bears, so they're great. But because they just appear.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, this pear's only a year old. Like a year and a half old at most. I'm like, and I didn't know it was a pear. So I had to kind of
learn. That's a surprise.
I had to learn on the fly how to raise the babies. I ended up making like my own. By this point, I got in contact with snail farms and stuff and managed to source better snails. But then I kind of was like, right, what am I going to do? So I ended up blending all that. I pretty much make my own baby food.
Right, okay.
Which like blended up snail meats, a few different ingredients and stuff. And I also add Arcadia's Omnigold because I'm like, at least then if you get to winter and your snail's not big enough to brumate and there's no snail, if your skink's not old enough to brumate and it doesn't go down, but there's no snails, at least you can feed it a different food.
Yeah.
Like a commercially available food. So that's what I did. I had those for a while. I always thought I'd keep the first lizard I bred. I had a hold bag. I tracked him every month. I got him out. I took photos. And then I was at that kind of stage where I'm like, no, you need to be a bit more sensible. So he ended up going away to a friend. And then the next year, I was a bit more confident when I'd seen the breeding. Basically, with pink tongue skinks, they go to sleep around late October, kind of middle November time. And then mine kind of show up every so often. But I don't feed them because I turn their lights off. I've got plants in it. I'll kind of keep a light on, just keep the plants alive. But I kind of turn all their heating off and stuff. And they kind of show up. And if they are up for a couple of days, I'll offer them food. But normally, I just kind of leave them to kind of go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And around New Year's Day, I've had it before on New Year's Day, but around New Year's kind of day, kind of early January, they'll both wake up and the male will be all over the female. And that's been consistent, and I've witnessed that, and I've documented that pretty much straight away. So then I flick the heating back on, I get them fed, the female gets lots of food. Around this time, like my female will always be out basking right now because she's kind of heating up, she's kind of incubating, internally incubating the babies. Yeah. And then late April, early May, you'll kind of walk in one day. And last year I had it down. I had it down to the day where I was like, right, you're gonna give birth on this day, and yeah, sure enough. So,
and so do the pair? I presume they live together permanently all the time. You don't have there's no need to split them. And I presume they'll only have one clutch a year.
Yeah, so it's just one litter because it's that they need to kind of go down and they need to kind of all that kind of they're seasonal breeders. Yeah, but what's really interesting is that they have been documented and people have kept them in like family colonies.
Yeah.
So what's really, I had a friend who had like them in a big massive viv. He had his original like trio. He had some of my sub adults. He had some babies from the previous year. And then he had babies from that year all living together.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And if I knew that 3 years ago, I probably wouldn't have sold my whole back because I would have just kept it in. And
yeah. Obviously, normally breeding in general, you have to be careful. Actually, I say breeding in general, I don't have enough experience, but will the male pester the female after she's laid her litter, or is it they're very much like they sort of know what they're doing?
Otherwise,
you haven't got to worry too much. She's eating enough all the time.
It's normally like I say, that couple of weeks at the start of January.
Yeah.
And that's it. I've never witnessed anything after that.
Yeah.
He's never not too fast.
The babies are cute as well. Like, I was looking.
They're really color cute. Contrast on them. And I think that's the thing is that I think they are, as long as you get the feeding right.
Yeah.
They are a fantastic, lizard. They're such a good size. They're arboreal, so you can make some really cool kind of like arboreal setups for them. But they also like to use their like dens and their hollows and kind of because they bury.
Yeah,
and they're kind of like that. They live in the kind of like the forests, like the kind of subtropical condition, the forests in Australia. So they don't mind the heat.
Yeah,
but they're also really hardy. So like I said, I turn my lights off for 3-4 months of the year.
Yeah,
and but you can also plant them out really cool because you can, you know, they like a bit of humidity.
Yeah,
so they're so diverse that you can do so much with them and have them in such cool.
Like a really cool species to. Because you can do, I although I keep relatively arid species, or very arid for the most part, I really like tropical stuff, and I really like a really nice planted tank. And if it's arboreal as well,
you can
get
you
so much opportunity to make such a cool setup.
And what's really interesting with them is that because they're from that kind of areas of Australia, they're found alongside stuff like the Australian leaf-tailed geckos, stuff like that. There's been a lot of keepers that have kept them in kind of multi-species type enclosures.
That's cool.
Because obviously they use all their enclosure, but they're snail ears.
Yeah.
Like so
there's no chance.
If the female is breeding, I'll offer her grubs like wax worms or stuff like that, and things that look almost like a slug.
Yeah.
And she'll eat those. But other than that, they don't touch crickets. They don't touch locusts.
Right.
Roaches, stuff like that. They've got no interest in anything like that. And they're relatively slow moving. So I've seen people keep them with crested geckos, with day geckos. I think a really big enclosure with something like the Australian leaf tails that they find naturally alongside would be really cool. Obviously, you need to make sure that it's all done properly and it's not just
definitely. There's one thing cohabitating the same species, but cohabitating different species.
There was a really good talk at the AHH conference last weekend from the zookeeper from Drayton Manor.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever been to the zoo at Drayton Manor, but a lot of their enclosures are multi-species cohab.
Okay.
Like, so there's a lot of like geckos of dart frogs, there are a lot of like lizards of different lizards, and a lot of it is. And his talk was about how to do it sensibly and how to do it safely and kind of picking what species you use and stuff like that. And skink, the pink tongue skinks are a good example of that.
Yeah.
Where their diet really doesn't clash with anything else. They are like, I remember I got really annoyed when I was first doing research about them because everybody kept comparing them to crested geckos. Crested geckos? Like they're nothing like a crested gecko. And everyone kept saying, keep them like a crested gecko. I'm like, but it's not until you actually look like, you know, your crested gecko, if you don't spray it for a day, it's, you know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. Same with pink tongues. Like they are that kind of, so I get the comparison, but I don't think they should be compared. But
No, that's fair enough. It makes perfect sense. That was a nice little segue, actually, you mentioning AHH, because that was the next topic on my list of topics I wanted to cover. It's not obviously specifically about yourself, but I know it's something that you have been to a couple of times, and from what I understand, you're quite passionate about it as well.
And
that is the AHH, which is the Advancing Herpetological Husbandry Conference, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Now, I have to be completely honest and transparent. This is something I'd never heard of until probably last year, where I was making the transition from royal keeping to, like, realizing there's loads of other animals in the whole world and something so much cooler. It's not something I'd ever heard of before. So I'm sure there's probably at least a listener that was in the same position as me. So could you sort of shine some light on, like, what, obviously you were there last weekend. So what is AHH? Obviously, I've covered the list of it, but like the name of it. But
so
what are you likely to see? What can you expect when you go?
So it stems from the Advancing Herpetological Husbandry Facebook group. So it's run by the moderators and the admins of that group. Right. As it started, this was the sixth year or the seventh show. It's always been based in the UK. It's always based at Drayton Manor. They're our sponsors of it, and each year it kind of is growing and growing and growing. Last year was my first year I went, so I've been for 2 years now. And it's just basically a whole weekend, two full days of just talks from kind of like industry experts. Sometimes it's just fellow keepers that are really passionate about a certain species that go and just to give you a talk on that. But there's normally a kind of theme. So last year was a lot of talks were about lighting. This year, a lot of talks are about nutrition.
Right. Okay.
Sometimes they get zookeepers. Sometimes they get kind of people like big breeders, stuff like that. So it's always one of those things where you're not going to go and you're not going to enjoy every single talk, because not every single talk's for you, not every talk's kind of based on what you're interested in. This year there was a lot of talks about tortoises and a lot about tortoise diet, and that's just not something I'm interested in. But last year there was some talks about monitor keeping and monitor breeding and stuff like that, which was obviously quite an interesting But it's more of the networking. Like, they've kind of got like two talks, a half an hour break, two talks, half an hour break, two talks, like a lunch. Then you get dinner there. If you pay for the dinner, then you get a nighttime one. And then you end up staying up to like 12, 1 o'clock at night, just talking to people in the bar.
Yeah.
Just talking lizards all weekend.
Nice.
So even if none of the talks interest you, you'll be surprised, because some of them will actually be like, oh yeah, that's quite cool. There was a talk this year from a zookeeper from London Zoo who was talking about how they do their feeders.
Right, okay.
And how they keep their, what feeders they breed. And it actually turned out they bred some really weird stuff, like domino cockroaches. We think of them as pets, like people kind of keep them, they're relatively expensive. He's like, actually, they make quite a good feeder for quite a few of our species. So it's like things like that. And you're like, we all kind of stem from almost wanting to be a zookeeper. Like, we always, you know, we all have that kind of, that's our collections kind of mix. It fills that void. So it's really cool when you hear from zookeepers and you're like, actually, you're doing something very similar to me, or I can do that at home. So no, I'd like, the talks are always interesting, but they're always second compared to the kind of the networking with people and being with friends. And there's always some stalls as well, like a few companies coming to show them. Reptile Systems was there last year showing off their bulbs, like their prototypes and stuff. Habitat and Arcadia had a table this year showing off their Luminae. So, Habitat had their Fogger, which was really cool.
Yeah, I saw a couple of pictures of that or videos on somebody's story.
Yeah,
that looked really cool.
Their Viv was really nice, and their had a Fogger out as well. So, it's just nice, and it's just nice to chat to people, and then because obviously it brings a lot of people closer. There's some people that come from Europe as well sometimes. So,
yeah. It's definitely something that I'm going to try and attend next year. I wasn't able to do it this year, unfortunately. But from what I've seen, it looks really up my street. And there's a lot of I've seen a lot of people commenting or talking about certain lectures they saw or certain topics. And there's a lot of things that have sparked my interest even more so. But I wasn't even there, so
there were like some of the talks that kind of, some of the lighting stuff went right over my head, and I'm just like, oh man. And you sometimes get imposter syndrome, and you're like, oh god, am I at this level? Should I be here? But
I do a podcast every other week. I have imposter syndrome a lot of the time.
But it's a good weekend, and I fly down.
Yeah.
So last couple of years, I've flown down the day before. I stay at Paul's. I get to speak lizards to him for a whole day. Then we go down. We stay at the hotel at Drayton Manor, just so you can have the whole night. And then I go back, and then I stay again, and just get to chat lizards like the whole weekend. It's brilliant. I have so much fun. It's like, honestly, it's the highlight of my year. Like my events year. It's what I look forward to the most.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, next year I'm definitely gonna go. And if nothing else, just to come along and actually see you, because you were only like 30 minutes from my house and I was just at home being all lonely.
And then, this last weekend, we, on the way back, we stopped by Bailey's house. Bailey's backgrounds, and I got to see his stuff. And obviously, I'm very far north. I've got nobody up here. So even just seeing a couple of people's collections, like, oh, wow, this is so cool. And he's got some fantastic animals. So.
Yeah. No, it looked like good. And obviously, stalking your Instagram story, it was nice because you obviously met up with Dan as well, and you managed to go and visit a couple of shops down here and
do some awesome. Almost stole a pair of black trees. Yeah,
yeah, I can understand the temptation. To be fair, just back to AHH quickly. Was there any standout lectures or any particular topics that were brought up at the event this year that you think were particularly interesting that you're going to go home and sort of like think a bit more
probably about? Actually, the two I mentioned, so the cohabbing one from Drayton Manor, the zookeeper from Drayton Manor, I got to speak to him a little bit during, like, you also get a zoo tour like on the Friday night. They open the zoo for like an hour after closing.
Yeah,
you just get a private tour, which is cool.
That's cool. I'd go also, for that.
Because like it's closing time, all the animals are kind of away, so you don't see a whole lot, but it's still nice that you don't have to deal with people. But his talk was really interesting. Obviously, it was about cohabbing, and obviously that's such a taboo topic in the private sector. She's like, oh no, don't, like, you, people will gut you for keeping two lizards of the same species together, let alone like multiple different species. But obviously in zoo enclosures, you see like four or five in one enclosure, and it's quite common. So hearing the process, hearing how like they kind of what they do. Like, they kind of mark out, like, right, well, we need something for the bottom, we need something for the middle, we need something for the top. All right, they can't compete for the same heating, they can't compete for the same diet. If one's aquatic, then we need, you know, like, just all these different things. And I thought that was a really interesting one. And then, yeah, the other zookeeper from ZSL, the London Zoo, who was just talking about his feeders, because actually it's, you almost think the zoo is like the peak, where like they've got all this resources and all this money, when actually he's like, no, I had to do it on nothing. I had to go into each building and ask if they've got a spare room. And he showed some photos of like almost cupboards. Under my stairs were bigger than some of the rooms he was using.
Wow.
And just he done it on nothing.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting. But those were my two. You always get the ones where they're really good speakers, like, you know, these people that can just go up and just talk to an audience.
Yeah.
And they can make you interested in whatever they're talking about. They had an American come over who breeds giant tortoises and like big iguanas, stuff that I'm not interested in at all. But the way he spoke and the way he kind of engaged with everybody, it was the same. Last year's Friday night after dinner talk was about snapping turtles.
Okay.
I have no interest in snapping turtles, but yeah, this guy could hold an audience. It was good. So like, you always get the ones that are a bit more showpiecey. But
that's quite nice though, because I suppose you're coming away with things that you didn't even like contemplate, and you're coming away with that little bit of extra knowledge.
Yeah. So it's good. Nice. But like I say, the best bit the Friday night, where you just sit up all night just talking to people.
Just chatting reptiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. That's cool. Definitely. It's in the kind of, it's in the on the back burner for next year, and I'm hoping I'll be able to make it. So we'll take another little sidestep, moving away from reptiles again, over to a brand that I've mentioned repeatedly, probably since the first episode of the podcast. You've mentioned it a couple of times today as well, and they're doing a little bit of subtle advertising in the back of your camera, and that is Arcadia. Now, you are an Arcadia partner.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that. What does being Arcadia partner entail? How did that come about?
So it's relatively new, so I'm not 100% sure on the details. But basically, I got reached out to about a certain product that's going to be having like a promotion week soon.
Right.
Asked if I'd be interested in kind of, and it was a product I already used, and I used a lot. So they're like, oh, can we send you some? Just take some footage. There's no obligation. But I just took this and kind of went with it. So yeah. I've done a few bits that weren't the norm. They really enjoyed that. They were like, oh, that's great. And then they're like, oh, would you mind joining our Arcadia partnership program? Which basically, we just send you some products every now and then. You just use them. If you enjoy them, you know, share the love, really. So I recently got my package a couple of days ago. Thanks, V. I recently got my package a couple of days ago. A few products I hadn't actually ever used, which is interesting, because you think, like, well, I think Arcadia, I've used Arcadia for years. All my lighting in my room, I keep looking that way because that's my room. I can see the door to my room. I use all Arcadia lighting, all Arcadia heating, all Arcadia minerals and supplements, all Arcadia dry foods for like my crested gecko and stuff. So, like, to have a brand like that reach out to you and be like, oh yeah, we want to send you stuff. And you're almost like, well, whatever you send me, I'm probably going to already be using, but you're never going to say no. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially if it's going to save you a bit of money.
It. So they're like, oh, like, we're not going to tell you what we're going to send. We want it to be a surprise. So they sent a few bits. I posted on my story today. Some of the bits I already use, which is great because I just added them. And there's some bits that I hadn't used before because I just never really thought about it, to be honest. Yeah. So it's been quite interesting. And then, yeah, there's just no obligation. We seen last year with the promotion of Luminize that people did get it early. People, obviously I'm not at that stage yet, but you know, you never know, one day maybe. And it's quite good as well. Like my channel is relatively small. So I appreciate that they liked the content I was making and putting the effort into my content rather than the amount of followers I had.
No, definitely.
And like the fact that I actually enjoy the products and like the products. So
yeah, no, that's cool.
It's all relatively new, but it's quite exciting at the same time.
It definitely, yeah, congratulations on that. It is something that sounds really exciting.
And they oversent me on merchandise.
Yeah, I saw that. You got a big old box of Luminized bits and bobs.
Yeah, and like
Luminized promotional material, not
and just stuff. Loads of, yeah, well, unfortunately, and loads of posters and stuff. So I'm going to be doing a few bits with that and going to share the love a little bit.
Definitely, that's cool. So I got a couple more questions, but we are sort of getting towards wrapping up.
Yeah,
no worries. If you guys are watching and there's any questions you want to ask Michael, now is the time to ask the questions, and I'll pop them up on screen shortly. So another thing that I just wanted to touch on is a Facebook group that I know that you are running. It started relatively recently, but it seems to be growing quite nicely. So let's talk a little bit about that. Tell us what that Facebook group is, why people should join it if they want to join it.
So currently I admin Tree Monitors UK, which is the only UK-based group solely focused on tree monitors, so Varanus Prusinus complex. The reason for that was obviously I enjoy sharing videos of my own green tree monitor. I've got friends who keep lots of tree monitors as well.
Yeah.
But all the groups, so there's two or three like kind of big tree monitor groups, but they're all kind of worldwide.
Okay.
And with that you get a lot of Americans, you get a lot of spam, you get a lot of this and that. And I've always enjoyed UK-based Facebook groups. I always find they're a bit more smaller, a bit more tight-knit, a bit more kind of like community-based rather than just everybody. So I went to join there was a Tree Monitors UK group, and it was full of spam and adverts and indecent images, just the whole lot.
Just sort of been left to go.
Yeah, so I just got left to it. So I messaged the guy because I was going to make my own. But I was like, if I make my own, I'm going to name it the same thing. It's going to be a nightmare because two, they're going to come up. There's going to be two of them. You're going to see one that's full of not nice images and you're just not going to want to join. So I messaged that guy, the admin. I was like, hey, you know, like I'm wanting to make my own one, but you have one. Would you mind? You know, I can see for like the last 6 years, you've not posted in it. It's not been active. Do you mind? And he messaged back. He was really nice. He was like, actually, I've completely forgot about the group. I've just went on it. I can't believe that's what's happened to it, you know, because it was quite bad, the state it was in. He's like, yeah, of course, like I keep tree monitors, but, you know, I'm not interested in it anymore. So I quite like social media. I ran a few Discord pages, a few WhatsApp groups for various different species and creators and stuff like that. So I quite like social media. So, yeah, I got control of that. It took a while because it was a public group. Obviously, that's how everything gets posted. So I made a private group because then people will feel comfortable sharing their stuff. I just changed a few bits, invited everybody who I knew who kept tree monitors. And yeah, so it's growing quite nicely.
Yeah. That's cool. So where can people find that if they are listening?
It's on Facebook. It's just Tree Monitors UK.
Perfect.
And then you just join it, answer a few questions. The questions are really just to make sure that people aren't like just spam accounts or bot accounts trying to join, just so that I know you're not
I run a couple of not reptile related groups, but a couple of Facebook groups, and it's amazing how much spam you get through them if you're not careful as well.
And then
spam is ridiculous as well,
and because you're running an animal group, you always worry because the second somebody puts something for sale, your group gets taken down.
Yeah,
so now I've got post permissions on. So I need to obviously accept any posts, and I don't even read them as long as I see that it's not an animal for sale. And it's not. It's actually got a tree monitor in it. Then yeah, it's
fine. No, that's fair enough. So yeah, if I remember, I'll put the link in the description. It's not in there now, but I will try and do that for you as well.
And it's got some really cool keepers. It's quite nice as well that it's all quite relatively new keepers as well. There's quite a few new keepers on it that are just got their first couple of babies and just want to share videos and stuff. So.
Yeah, and even if you're not a tree monitor keeper at the moment, like I'm not a tree monitor keeper, but I'm in the group just because I'm interested in tree monitors. You don't have to be a keeper.
You just can watch other videos, engage, comment.
Yeah,
it's a nice group.
But you are, like you said, you're building a nice little community over there as well. It's growing really nicely. So we are pretty much there. We've been going for just under an hour and 20 minutes. And I've honestly really enjoyed this conversation, Michael. But at some point, we have to wrap it up, and that point is now. So the last question for today, well, it's actually not the last question because there's another one afterwards, but this is the wrap-up question for today's podcast.
Yep.
The wrap-up question is, if you could give your 10-year-old self a piece of advice, what would that advice be?
find good friends. I think was like that's been the biggest thing for me. Like I say, I was that kid in school that had a dragon and people thought was weird. And then obviously I had good friends that were fish keepers that we lived together, and obviously that was good because we got bounce ideas. But then when I kind of got serious about reptile keeping, it kind of, you just kind of spiral. And if I had somebody that was like, no, you know, just like stick to what you like, or you know, you're being an idiot, why are you going out and buying? So yeah, just like surround yourself with good people. And if you surround yourself with good people, then they'll kind of call you out when you're doing stuff that maybe you shouldn't do, or just, it's, the hobby is 10 times better when you've got people to share it with.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And like, I don't engage with many groups or like Facebook groups or channels or whatever that's like got massive followings, because they're just, it's not about the community then. It's not about the connections or the interactions. It's just all spam, really. So
yeah,
I like keeping a close-knit group. I like keeping like good friends. So, and then you get to enjoy weekends away. You get to enjoy seeing people's collections grow as well. So yeah,
nice, good answer. I like that.
But don't invite yourself to things. No, when you start inviting yourself to things, that's when you don't get invited.
Yeah, I don't invite myself to anything. Oh, there is a question from Paul as well. So, question from Paul: what's the next species you are getting?
I don't know, because the next animal I want would be a female green tree. Obviously, I've got a green tree, so it's not another species.
Yeah.
I kind of flutter. There's a few things I'd like. Black trees have been really, like, ever since last weekend, I got to interact with quite a few black trees. Like, I think because they're so social, like a tree monitor is good to interact with. A black tree is social.
Yeah.
Like they are almost next level in terms of interactions and being able to like handle ability and stuff. My dream species at the moment, now that I've kind of ticked a lot of them off, would either be yellow tree monitors, Varanus reisengeri, or Varanus mitchellii, the Mitchell's water monitor. I think they're two species that I do not have the funds for anytime soon, but they'd be very cool to keep. So
there we go.
Probably another tree monitor, but it's hard to say.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Right, and then finally, Michael, where can people find you?
So two Instagram accounts. Originally I was Longfield Reptiles and Aquatics. When I started getting more into isopods and stuff, I seen that there was a bit of a change in my viewership or like my views and stuff. So I made two pages. So I run Longfield Reptiles, which is solely reptile content on Instagram. And then my Longfield Exotics and Aquatics is just absolutely everything else I do. So both on there. But
I've put a link to, I can't remember. There's a link to one of the two accounts.
Yeah, but they're all linked together, and it's all cross-posted a lot of the time. Instagram's really good for that. So
yeah, perfect. Right. So if anybody wants to know anything more about Michael, like I said, the notes, the description, the link is in the show notes below. And you can go and have a chat with him and see what he's posting over there. Michael, I'm going to say goodbye to you now, but please.
No worries. Thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed it.
It's quite nice to finish a podcast before the 4-hour mark. So.
Yeah, no, I know. I looked back to look at your poll when I was talking to you about it, and I was like, I have not got over 4 hours to listen to this podcast. I did like the first hour and a half. I was like, I
can't. My partner, she was like, oh, so like that's me dumped for the night then. I was like, no, it'll be a short one. And she's like, yeah, 4 hours later. You always say that. I'm like, no, like Ben's ones are always about an hour and a half. They're never.
I try and stick to like an hour and a half. I don't.
Yeah, no, but like, I think that's the same. When you start speaking to people that are in the same hobby, you could just talk and talk and talk.
Yeah,
and I'll talk for Britain if I want to. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just keep going. We didn't even touch on half the species I keep. So,
well, we have to come back for round two then, mate.
Yeah,
that's perfect. Nice run. Right, I'm gonna pop you off and hang around and we'll catch up once.
Yeah, no worries.
I finish. But I was gonna finish up. Thanks again.
Bye.
Why is Paul? Why? Who's shutting whose mouth? I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, where are we going this year? We're gonna go Crocodiles of the World. I don't know when. Right. I really enjoyed that episode. Like Michael said, we could sit here and talk for many, many hours more, but I do have to finish up because we like to keep it under an hour and a half. So thank you all very much for tuning in today. I really did enjoy the episode. If you want to keep up to date, go and check out Instagram or Facebook. Just search RepChat and I'm sure it will pop up. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is a Patreon available. It opens you up to private Discord where you get early access to extra content and pre-recorded podcast episodes. It starts as little as £1 a month, and there is even a free day seven. Oh my God. There is even a free 7-day trial. So that's that. I've been your host, Ben McIntyre, and this has been the Reps Chat podcast. I will see you in a fortnight.